did not like it. And then the last year or so has been pretty crazy for CooperKit. So, you know, we went from being one of the smallest players that no one had ever heard of to now we have a bunch of the largest blogs on the internet. So we've got people like Pat Flynn and Leo Babauta and massive sites you probably haven't heard of that are way bigger than those people, like WellnessMama.com and they're just a ton of people, random people that like Tom Works, you know, great crew. And then, you know, an even bigger crew like John Lee Dumas and Michael Hyatt and lots of others, Brian Harris, who all promote ConvertKit now. So it's kind of turned into this this crazy thing. I guess other background in ConvertKit, we have, well, I should look this up, almost 1,500 customers now. We're 11, oh, we have 1,430 customers.
Wow.
11 employees. We tend to add about 2 employees a month now, and so it's growing pretty quickly. And our goal is just to, you know, I guess our overall goal is, I learned 3 or 4 years ago that it's possible to make 6 figures a year writing about your favorite topics on the internet. And I think that's the coolest thing ever. And so my goal is to just get that message in front of more people and, you know, build the tools to help them do that. So that's
awesome. Yeah. And you keep everything transparent, don't you, on that one dashboard?
I do. So if you want to know all, if you want to know anything about ConvertKit's numbers, here, I'll even drop in the link.
Cool.
I
found those very interesting.
Yeah. So I'm really big into transparency because I, you know, there was a few people early on in my blogging career who were public with their numbers, 2 random designers in particular, and I really resonated with that. So ever since then, I've made all of my numbers public. So yeah, you can see everything about ConvertKit. You can even see that, like, yeah, it's all there. And actually, I have the numbers refresh every day at 5 p.m. my time, which is right now. And so I'm just looking at the new numbers for today. Looks like we had $900 in monthly recurring revenue today. So
nice.
It's pretty ridiculous.
That's awesome. So we're starting to get questions in here, guys. Go ahead and type in anything you want. If you're on the video chat, you can just interject or raise a hand or whatever, or type it in, whatever you guys want. Otherwise, I'll probably facilitate a lot of these questions. But a couple people asked right away. Actually, Zach Bob just asked, did you bootstrap ConvertKit?
Yeah, so I've invested about $55,000 into ConvertKit so far, but otherwise it's entirely, and that was from my personal money, and then everything else is just, you know, funded by customers, and we plan to keep it that way. So
that's awesome. Okay, so now I think the core, I think, and again, any questions, guys, about ConvertKit, please, you know, put them out here, and especially if you want to get, like, if you want to get tactical or practical with this stuff. But otherwise, I want to talk, maybe take a step into the reason for creating ConvertKit, which comes back to the email marketing aspect of things. So tell me a little bit about, like, what, and I've gone through your training course, I think they're awesome, but maybe just give us a recap of, like, what makes effective email marketing? Kind of generally, and then maybe we can go more specific from there.
Yeah, so at a high level, maybe not necessarily what makes effective email marketing, but what makes effective marketing is education. And so we actually have these T-shirts for ConvertKit that just say, teach everything you know. And that's the idea behind that is, you know, if you teach, people will pay attention. And then, you know, you start to build an audience. And then when you say, oh, I also make this thing, or this thing will make your life easier, then lots of people sign up, and that, you know, that becomes really powerful. Email just happens to be the best channel for doing that, you know, for reaching people, and it, you know, it gets the highest engagement rates, it gets the highest conversion rates. Friends over at Gumroad gave me a bunch of stats for their entire platform. And, you know, comparing conversion rates, you know, for their massive e-commerce platform between Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, email, and a few others. And email converts, you know, at almost double like the next best social competitor. And so there's a few other things of like, you know, with the email, if you decide that you don't like your email provider, you can export your list and import it somewhere else. Like that's something that you own that relationship. Whereas like if Facebook decides today that, you know, they're going to make it even more difficult to reach your Facebook fans, then you have no control of that. So did that answer your question, or did you want like more tactics, or what are you thinking?
No, I think that's good to start, because we're starting to get questions in here that are more tactical kind of. So one of the questions was if we can get a ConvertKit walkthrough. I think maybe we can probably dive into that. I wonder if we should wait a little bit before we dive into actually using it. Does anybody have any questions about just email marketing in general or specifically? Like, I'm sure we can dive into ConvertKit and how to use it, but I'd probably like to save that till the end, or even I can do a walkthrough with you guys to do that. But I'd like to leverage this time for Nathan's brain as much as possible with email marketing.
Hey, Nathan, this is Antonio here. Can you talk – I mean, I remember – meeting you, you came off as a very smart, intelligent guy. You'd already had a few wins under your belt. Was ConvertKit, was that just a smooth process? Because you made it look easy. Or is this an overnight success that took 3 years for that one overnight appearance?
This is an overnight success that's taken 3 years. Actually, there's another graph that I should dig up. You can go play with the ConvertKit dashboard on Baremetrics. You can look at, you can go back, you know, three years just about, and it was the opposite of an overnight success. Actually, a year ago, someone told me, someone well respected in the software industry said, hey, I think it's time that you shut down ConvertKit and admit that it's a failure. And he went on to say, like, or give it, you know, the time and attention it deserves and like build this into a full-time thing. And so that's when I was doing ConvertKit part-time, which is a little over a year ago. And so basically, I know you guys are all interested in business, so I'll throw out all the actual numbers. So October 2014, we were doing $1,300 a month in revenue. Today we're doing almost $78,000 a month in revenue. So, like, it took 2 years of basically, you know, not much of anything, and then it, you know, has started to take off. But, you know, a lot of that growth has come in the last 3 months or so in particular.
What were some of the things that you actually did to, I mean, I know a lot of it's progressive, but obviously there's something maybe that was, like, more of a trip that kind of unleashed the floodgates here.
Yeah, so we did... the first thing is that we focused on a niche. And so, and I say we at the time, it really was just me. And so focusing on a niche, first we chose email marketing for authors. And when I had the term author in mind, I was thinking, you know, author, course creator, people like, you know, what I was doing, selling books and courses through my blog, the type of thing that Tom's doing. And so, focusing on email marketing for authors did two things. All of a sudden, they could, you know, they're like, yeah, ConvertKit's good at, I don't know, it's kind of good at most of the, you know, it was totally generic. But once we did email marketing for authors, then those people who served authors were said, oh, this is a perfect fit, you know, let's roll it in. And so there's a bunch of people like Tim Grawl and some other people in the author community who started promoting us pretty heavily at that point. And that was great. Except that it attracted the wrong kind of person. So it was very effective, and then we learned that authors were not a good target for us because the people who most often identify with the term author are the ones they're thinking of, my goal in life is to self-publish a fiction book and sell it for 99 cents on the Kindle store. And that was totally different than the people that I had in mind, which was, hey, we're teaching really valuable skills, and we're going to make six figures a year, you know, off of books and courses, selling that to our audience. And so we ended up pivoting that. You know, we tried, like, email marketing for course creators, and then eventually settled on email marketing for professional bloggers. So picking a niche helped a lot, and then just direct sales. Like, so many people are out there saying, you know, I want to sell to the internet as a whole, you know? And you think of it in terms of numbers. You're going to get 10,000 visitors, and you're going to convert, you know, 4% of those. So you're going to have, I don't know, 400 email subscribers, and then our conversion rate on that list when we launch the product is going to be the X. What we did is took the opposite approach and just, well, and I should say, when it finally started working, I did the generic, you know, just numbers approach for a long time. But I just started picking people and say, hey, I think you'd be a good fit for using ConvertKit. And I sent a lot of cold emails. And luckily, you know, I had some friends in the space, so it wasn't like totally cold emails all the time. But I've sent probably 1,000 cold emails in the last year. So it was a lot of direct sales, a lot of direct outreach. And then what happened is those, you know, as we'd get someone on, it would leverage into getting, you know, their friends and that sort of thing. So, Tom, how many it'd be interesting to look up how many emails I sent you before you signed up.
I guess I could dig into my – I'll dig into back in here.
At some point, it'd be interesting to know because, yeah, like – I think we had probably a few conversations about it, and then maybe like a month or two later, you came back on your own and signed up.
Yeah.
Hey, Nathan. Dave Chesson here. Wondering if I could just ask a quick question.
Yeah.
So you were talking about you had a target market, and you kind of realized later on that it wasn't exactly the right fit. So who would be the ConvertKit avatar of today?
Yeah, so So now we're focusing very specifically on professional bloggers or those who want to become professional bloggers. So like this pure internet marketers in like the sleazy sense of the word or term sign up. And so like those we've asked them to leave because they don't fit with that. But people like Pat Flynn or like Leo Babauta from Zen Habits, you know, those people who are putting out really great content and then selling digital products to those. And, you know, at the level, like we generally don't go after absolute beginners because if anyone's price sensitive, we're not really interested. You know, we don't have a free plan to start. I like to staff our support team with people who get you know, whoever you could hire for really cheap to run support. So ideal customer, I would say someone who has at least 10,000 subscribers, though that's by no means a requirement, and then, you know, makes their living selling books and courses to that audience. Or other, you know, products of other kinds. But books and courses are great because they're downloadable and you can actually track the sales, you know, if you're selling through Gumroad or SendOwl or Samcart or one of these providers.
Nathan, this is Antonio in the back. I've got a this question comes from Jack Bourne. He says hi from I was just in a mastermind with him, and he said that I mentioned you were going to be on this, and he noticed that your month over month revenue growth, it went from 20% to 30% to 60% just a few months ago. What happened that you had that just huge jump this summer?
Yeah, so a couple things. So we ended the month of June at $10,000 in monthly recurring revenue. And something I should point out, this because all of our revenue comes from small accounts and it's consistent every month, these are numbers where if we stop promotion, we would make the same amount next month. So it's not like we start from zero at the beginning of the month. Like with one time, we did 10,000 a month in July. We didn't land that many like small accounts, but we landed three large accounts. So one of the largest barbecue blogs on the web, one of the largest health and wellness blogs, actually, which is wellnessmama.com, and then also Pat Flynn, and they all happened to sign up on the exact same day. And so if you go look back in Barometrics, you can find that day that they all signed up. And so that was just a result of direct sales. Finally, we were winning bigger July at 15,000 a month, then added 3,000 in August. And then in September, like, Pat Flynn started to promote us some, but he wasn't super public about it. But we were at the point where we were able to tell other people that Pat was using us. So that helped with some of the credibility. You know, there was a time when people with really large lists would say, like, yeah, I don't know if you can handle my list of 20,000 people. And so now we're able to say, like, actually, our big accounts have 350,000 subscribers, so I think we'll be okay. So it gave us more confidence. And then things really started to kick off in October when we did webinars with, well, so Pat Flynn Aweber to Infusionsoft to ConvertKit, which obviously was compelling. And then we did webinars with three other people, someone named Mariah Kaz, who she has, you know, a very dedicated fan base of mostly women entrepreneurs. John Lee Dumas, we did a webinar with him, and then a couple others. And we just continued all of that momentum rolling into November and December.
All right.
So I don't know that that fully answered the question, but basically it's a culmination of everything we've been putting together for basically a full year.
No, that was solid. And I just saw an email from Video Fruit, and he actually promoting, I think, Pat's testimonial. I mean, so it sounds like you're hitting it, Nathan, in various angles. Is there one channel that's been like deadly effective for you? It's like if this would be the one you would have to choose, you would go for it, or one or two.
Yeah. So the one that has gotten us to this point is direct sales, just reaching out, emailing people directly. And so we do it in a few different ways. One is we scan the web for what tools people are using. So we use something like BuiltWith or nerdydata.com to return, you know, an Excel file for example, or Infusionsoft. And then we'll sort those by Alexa ranking so we can, you know, at least have some idea of the size of the site, because generally there's a correlation between traffic and list size. If you have no traffic, it's hard to build a list. And then from there, you know, it's finding email addresses, writing those emails. Because we have an advantage that in the blogging community, once people switch, they tend to tell other people. Like, once Pat switched, he told no one, but people just started noticing that his click tracking was going through ConvertKit, and they were like, what's this ConvertKit thing? You know. And then once he did start announcing it, like, the advantage is, you know, he was for us, when we use direct sales to close one medium-sized to large account, there's a lot of network effects that come with that. There's a lot of copycat. You know, people are like, oh, well, if he switched, then I will as well. So that's pretty effective. So direct sales is the one that I would always choose. And even, you know, everyone talks about content marketing and how amazing that is. Content marketing did not work for us early on. Like, when we were just getting started, that was my entire background. So I was like, oh, I'm going to write tons of blog posts. I'm going to get this message out there. And the thing is, our product, you know, it wasn't very polished at the time, and we didn't have, like, what you'd call in the software space, product market fit. So we didn't Infusionsoft, but easier to use than MailChimp. It's a really simple phrase, but it took us a very long time to come to that phrase. It was actually a customer saying that about us. And so that positions our product. So even when we started hitting some growth and getting to about 25,000 a month in revenue, you know, people were saying, like, okay, now it's time to do content marketing. And I forced myself to not do it until we hit 50,000 a month. And the reason is there's always more opportunities out there. Like, you can keep jumping around to this or that, and there's, you know, there's the Facebook ads, and there's so much stuff that we could be doing. And what I was scared of doing, and then once we start to get that to work, then jumping off and doing content marketing and Facebook ads and all these other things, and only realizing, you know, maybe 10, 20% of the potential from direct sales because we jumped off to other things too quickly. So I will tend to set like artificial thresholds of, you know, $50,000 a month in revenue or whatever, and say, like, I'm not allowed to revisit that decision until we hit that success point. So, for example, we had a lot of conversations about raising money. You know, people have wanted to invest and something like that. And I kept going back and forth on it. You know, we had some really great people who wanted to invest. And so just a month ago, or actually even just 2 or 3 weeks ago, I decided that we weren't. $200,000 in monthly recurring revenue. And so, like, I like to put off decisions like that. But I, now that we have, like, the direct sales model dialed in and we're continuing to, I guess, pour more gas on that, then I feel good about, you know, hiring someone like we just did to start doing content marketing and doing the Facebook ads and stuff like that.
Thank you. That was a great answer. You know, Tom, I've seen Dave and asking quite a few questions. Dave?
Yep.
Would you like to ask those questions out loud? Oh, can we hear him? Maybe he's muted.
Dave Berlin.
I do have a. I'm just, when I say I'm just starting out, I have a list of about 1,000 people. It's a very targeted list. Is ConvertKit, so I'm not very technological savvy. We went for Infusionsoft on a different company that I work with, and that was not going to work for us. But ConvertKit, I watched Tom's videos. It seemed like they're going to be a lot easier, you know, for somebody that's not real great at software and things like that. Is it still going to work for what I'm trying to do? I'm looking at rolling out an online course in January. So from having no list or, you know, no real concept of email marketing, is that
I think it'll work really well. And I should say that we tend to focus on the higher end of the market, and the reason for that is because the beginners or intermediate people tend to fall in place behind whatever the market leaders are using. And so by focusing in one place, we get the entire range. So we have about 700 customers that have fewer than 1,000 email subscribers. So it works really well at that. And for, you know, the core, like if you're selling a book or a course, really what you want to be able to do is you want to have an automated sequence when people first sign up that, you know, introduces them to your best content. And then the other most important part, because you can do the first part in pretty much any tool, but the more important part is that once someone buys that, so whether they're buying through Gumroad or Teachable or Shopify or WooCommerce or whatever you're using, they need to be tagged as having purchased so that they stop getting that pitch sequence. And I see this mistake all the time where people are like, or they'll even write their emails like, hey, if you've already bought your course, ignore this, but, and it's like, dude, you should know whether they've bought your course or not, like, you know. And then the great thing is if you know that, then you can have the sequence that's pitching them to buy, and then as soon as they do buy, they're not getting that anymore. And they start getting another sequence that's, hey, here's how to get. And I had no idea that this was a factor until I started selling books and courses. Is that tons of people will buy your material and then never use it. Like, it's so frustrating because, I don't know, I put a lot of work into that material and it really helps people. And so, you know, you'll get to the point where you'll have a launch, it'll do really well, and you'll be quite happy about that. But then later on, you're like, but I want people to actually put the material to use and see the benefits from it. And so that's where, like, a follow-up sequence after they buy can remind them to, like, hey, check out this, you know, what's in this module, and really encourage them to actually do it.
I saw Brennan Dunn do that, maybe on your up, and it's like, now we're on chapter 1 or on chapter 2, kind of an interesting way to take a book and actually create something additional on top of it on the back end, which I thought was brilliant. It kept me accountable to like reading, and like, yeah. And he actually has a form in there where you can answer questions. So a very easy thing to do to create a lot more value for any type of product, I think.
Yeah, if you guys aren't already following Brennan, you can learn a ton of stuff from him. And then he has some really powerful like automations behind the scenes and stuff like that. In his autoresponder, actually one of my favorite things that he does is, so if anyone doesn't know his stuff, it's at wfreelancing.com. But if you sign up for his list, it'll have biggest frustration, with your freelancing business right now. And, just hit reply and let me know. So he has a Gmail filter that takes all the replies to that email, categorizes them, and then when he needs to write a blog post, he just clicks over to that, and all these people are like, man, I don't know how to fire clients. I don't know how to find more leads. And just all these people talking about the biggest frustration. And he has material to write his next 100 blog posts just off of that. And so powerful. And then when it's time to write a sales page, he can go in there and actually use their language, how people describe their own problems, and work that into his sales page. And
awesome. So a couple questions here that were, I think I skipped, but I want to come back to them. Zach Bob asked, can ConvertKit guarantee inbox delivery and not into the promotion tab or promotion folder of Gmail?
Yeah, so that depends a huge amount on the behavior of the individual person. I would say right now about 75% or 80% of our emails to Gmail go straight to the inbox. And if you have trouble with that, you can just write into ConvertKit support. We have a guy on our team, his name's Sam. His entire job is email deliverability. He's very, very good at that. So it's not something that we can do across the board. The biggest thing is if you ask your subscribers to move you over, that's a huge signal to Gmail to like, oh, this doesn't belong in. If you get 25 or 50 people to move you from promotions to inbox, it makes a huge difference.
Oh, interesting. So if I actually ask my audience to do that and they do it, it'll be a signal to Gmail to stop for other people as well, to stop putting it in my promotions
tab?
Interesting. Cool. We have another question from... also from Zach, how many different pricing models did ConvertKit go through to where it is today?
Yeah, so originally, let's see, we had three plans. I think it started at $40. Differentiated on like how many opt-in forms you could have, how many subscribers you could have. And then I get... I got a ton of feedback. People are like, dude, just increment your pricing plans on a single thing. This is too complicated to figure out. Like, but what if I'm going to want one more opt-in form? And anyway, so then we simplified it. So it was, I think we had six pricing plans of starting at $29 a month and then going up from there in a few different chunks. And then, I don't know, maybe March or April this year, we built the page that we have now where it's just a slider and you drag it and I don't even know how many pricing plans there are. There's a lot.
Did you decide the pricing there though? Did you look at what AWeber and MailChimp and everybody else is doing and then say this is like, how'd you go? I'm curious how you went about structuring the pricing as well.
Yeah, it was mostly comparison to other services and to see how it works. We wanted to remove all those objections of why people would switch or wouldn't switch, And so we tried to keep our pricing roughly in line with MailChimp and AWeber. Depending, like their price tiers fall at different places. If you had like 22,000 subscribers, you might be MailChimp. Might be get a lot more power than MailChimp, and it's the same price. And there's no $2,000 setup fee or anything like that, like with Infusionsoft.
Yep.
So we've tweaked it a little bit since then, but for the most part, you know, the other ones. If you want cheap email sending, there's a company called Mad Mimi, and so we get people coming over from them, and they're like, "Oh, but Mad Mimi only charges me $50 a month," and I'm like, "Yeah, but Mad Mimi is a crap product, so I'm not gonna compare to them," you know. Yeah. If it tells you anything, they got purchased by GoDaddy, and
there you go.
Yeah.
It says it all, doesn't it?
It does.
So I got a question.
So deliverability is something that's very hard to get absolute stats on. It's going to be different for everybody. And you, like, Gmail doesn't report back, "Hey, I put you in spam," versus "I didn't." All they do is they send back a message that says "accepted." And same with Hotmail and every other provider. So long as the email didn't bounce, they just tell you "accepted." And so you can't, like, even the email service providers like us can't pull hard stats on what shows up where. So we do two things. One, we listen to, you know, complaints or issues from customers and then address that directly. Because then once we find a problem or a customer says, "Hey, I sent..." The other thing is we have a bunch of our own accounts set up at Gmail and Hotmail and AOL and, you know, all these email providers that shouldn't exist anymore but still do. And, you know, and then we just send out mass emails and see where they fall. And so that's where we get our stats on, you know, roughly where we're falling in inbox versus promotion to Gmail, all that kind of thing. So I can tell you what people find when they switch to us is that we are currently beating every other provider, at least every other major provider, MailChimp, AWeber, and Infusionsoft on deliverability. And the reason are like these hardcore affiliate type people. Somehow we got really popular this week in a Facebook group of, like, that crowd of people. And, like, one guy, you know, he signed up for an account, and our automated spam stuff was like, this doesn't look good. Like, you know, so his account got put on hold while we reviewed it. And we told him, like, "Dude, sorry, this..." Because it wasn't, like, true spam. But it was falling in that direction where I didn't feel good about, you know, my company name being on the... being associated with the stuff that he was sending out. And he was like, he got really upset, and he was like, "Hey, but I sent you, you know, I referred three of my friends to..." Great quality email. We dig into it, and if they're not, if it's not a good fit, we just ask them, "Hey, move back to MailChimp or AWeber." And so we are super, super productive. That. And the other thing, like the kinds of email that we're sending, well, if any of you have used MailChimp and you send out an email and it'll tell you like how your open rate compares to the industry average, and it'll say like, you know, say you got 35%, and it'll be like, "Wow, you're doing amazing, because the industry average for your industry is like 3.1%, and which is true for the industry, but you got to realize all the big providers are sending that email that's getting opened by 3.1%, so it's getting terrible engagement, and your email, it's getting great engagement. Do a blog, you know, they want to be a part of it. So if we see an open rate under 15%, we take that seriously and start to investigate it and find out, like, okay, what's wrong with this list? Whereas most other providers would be like, 5%, you're fine. So we send much higher quality email, which gets us better deliverability.
Wow. When you find somebody, I'm super curious about this now, you see somebody who's getting less than 5% open rates, how do you engage them on that topic? Do you say, "Hey, here's how to send an email," or what do you do? Or do you actually look into like is it potentially like spam, like worthy, or what? Like, what's the process?
Yeah, so we have automated systems that actually will post. So we use Slack for all of our team communication. We have a channel in Slack. Let's see. I'll tell you what. Oh, it's called Spammer Fun Times. I don't know why one of my developers named it that, but so whenever somebody gets flagged, it goes into that. You know, it says, "Hey, take a look at this account." Somebody looks at it, and then you know it could be a low open rate because someone was sending it to an older list, and so we might email them and say, "Hey, why was this a low open rate?" But then we also like read the content of their broadcasts and say like, "Oh, this isn't cool," you know, and then we just make a judgment call then.
Gotcha.
And then we just send them an email and say, "Hey, we've blacklisted your account," you know. Because it turns out spammers don't usually write a lot of high quality content. They tend to, you know, scrape their lists or something like that. So if someone comes back and says like, "Oh, here's the blog," and we look at it and it's like, "Oh, it has plenty of traffic and it has plenty of great content," then they're probably not a spammer. You know, there might be something else weird temporary going on there.
Interesting. I find that very fascinating. We had a couple. Sorry, that was a selfish question. I was just curious about how that works. Like, how do you investigate something like that? Okay, we got some good stuff. Michelle asks, are autoresponders part of the inclusive price? Yes, they are. Unlimited, right?
Yeah, everything is included. You know, we want on how many subscribers you have.
Awesome. And then another question from Zach Bob was, do you track interactions after your subscribers open an email, if they purchase, et cetera?
So what we do now is, you know, we track clicks and everything like that. And then off of automations, you could tag people based on a bunch of different things. And so what we usually do is integrate with whoever your e-commerce provider is. I think we have integrations with about 10 or 15 right now, so all the major ones. Sendowl, DPD, Gumroad, Shopify, WooCommerce, and there's so many. Samcart. And so then when someone purchases in that that's the main thing. Other stuff that you can do is, like, when someone clicks the link, you would automatically subscribe them to an email course or remove a tag or a bunch of other things like that.
And then how about PayPal?
We don't have a direct integration with PayPal. We usually like people to use Gumroad or Sendowl or DPD or one of these other tools. And it has a lot more functionality than just, you know, a straight-up PayPal buy button. But if you're dead set on using PayPal by itself, you can do that through Zapier.
Yep.
Yeah. Same with, like, if we don't integrate with your provider,
new Rainmaker, ConvertKit integration.
You might be waiting a while.
Really? Oh, man. That's a bummer. Everybody was, like, all excited about it.
Okay, so that integration has been written for 3 months.
Yeah.
Like, the code has been written, and it has been on their staging and test servers. And for whatever reason, they just aren't rolling it out.
Well, they have big DNS issues, which is a total different side story. My site's been down, like, 50% of the time, like, the last 2 weeks. It's been horrible.
Oh, man.
But whatever. Well, whatever. I've integrated. I use Zapier for their purchase forms to connect Stripe. So, yeah, guys, if you don't know how to use Zapier, I can create another tutorial video to show you how to. Pages.
Oh, yeah. So Lead Pages does tons of things. It's really robust, has a lot of functionality, you know, and they have, I don't know, hundreds of landing page templates. And you could build, like, lead capture pages and then also, like, full-on sales pages and all that. ConvertKit, where it overlaps with lead pages, is we have similar functionality to their lead boxes, where it makes it really easy to give away, you know, an opt-in incentive or something like that, you know, or do content upgrades, any of that kind of thing. You know, so you click a link, a modal comes up, and you can download right in there. If you want to see that, if you go to Pat Flynn. Or, you know, you need a coming soon page for your book, or you're going to be a guest on someone's podcast and you want to tell them, you know, hey, go to nathanberry.com/name of this podcast to get your free gift or whatever. Those sort of pages where you need to create them really quickly. And you don't need a ton of complicated things. And so they're fairly limited, but they're cleanly designed, easy to put together. And the great thing is you don't have to, like, set it up and then go integrate it with your email provider because it's all right there. But if you're looking for, like, really robust landing pages, tons of templates, all of that, then you'd want to use lead pages and ConvertKit together. For all of our webinar registration forms and everything.
Really? That's cool. I got to look into that. I'm still using lead pages for that.
Hey, Tom, I have a question. Nathan, you've been talking about how you're making a lot of these determinations in your business, and it sounds like you have a very strong moral compass of how you want your business and how you want things to be. And you're drawing those lines and you're building a business. A lot of companies out there, you know, it's about the money. It's about getting the sales. But it sounds like you are making a very conscious decision. One of the things we talk about here at High Speed Elite is building a business, making money, doing things that matter.
To really just my fascination with this whole online business world that, you know, that what we do is even possible, you know, that you can get thousands of people to, you know, open your email and listen to everything you say, and that you have the ability to teach these people in a way that wasn't possible before. So I'm still fascinated that, like, it's even possible to do any of this. And so I just, like... Actually, my wife at one point was like, man, you talk about this a lot. And I was like, yeah. Did you know that you could make 6 figures a year, like, writing stuff on the internet? And she's like, yes, I know that. I guess getting this message out to more people is my main thing. And so that's one, you know, another reason, going back to the pricing thing, that I really like our pricing is because it's directly aligned with our customer success. And so if we put out a lot of great training content that helps you go from 1,000 subscribers to 5,000 subscribers, like, we don't have to charge for that training content because if you put it into place, you know, you're getting more value out of ConvertKit and you're paying more for it. But there's definitely things where, you know, on the internet, and people shouldn't be able to go browse through your Barometrics dashboard and see your churn and lifetime value and all these other numbers. And so I've been thinking about that and asked another friend for his opinion. He was just saying, like, well, is transparency a core value of what's key to you? Or, you know, was it just like an interesting marketing technique to get a little bit of attention? So I had to think about that again, and I was like, no, it's a core value, because when it comes to teaching, if you don't include numbers, it's really hard to give context. You know, so say we're talking about a book launch or a product launch, and I say, Tom, how'd the launch go? And he goes, oh, it did well. So, you know, that was a recent case where even though a bunch of smart people said, hey, it is not wise of you, and there's some serious downsides to putting all your numbers public, I had to decide, no. The education and sharing the story and all of that and being transparent about the numbers is a core value of ours. And so even if it costs us revenue, helps our competitors or things like that, we're gonna stick with it. Oh, Tom, you're muted.
Good stuff. So do you have any other core values that you established, like, as you started to hire people?
Yeah, other core values. I mean, it really comes down to we exist to make our customers more successful, and we're going to be transparent about the entire process. And so we shared our customer, all our revenue numbers and all of that when we made, you know, $3,000 a month, and we'll continue to do it up until, you know, we make $3 million a month and well beyond that.
That's awesome. Dave asked, what is ConvertKit looking to improve in the future? Ooh, that's a good question.
So as far as the product, you know, we're improving all of our segmenting, you know, how you French and whatnot. Those are the next big things on the roadmap. We're adding some A/B testing for you know, subject lines, stuff like that. Let's see. In a broader sense of what we're trying to improve is we're just trying to elevate the game as far as email marketing in general, how everyone does it. It's still somewhat of a spammy industry. People get away with using or think they have to use a lot of fairly questionable tactics in order to build a business, have this community, we call it the ConvertKit family, of a bunch of people who were really, really proud of the work that they're doing, how the education that they're doing for their audience, how they're improving the web. And I guess just elevate the entire blogging and email marketing space so that people look at it as this really positive thing that's having this huge impact.
It's awesome. Very cool. So we got a question. Is a ConvertKit conference in the future? Infusionsoft does Icon. This is from Dave Berlin. If so, I know Zach Bau would argue to crowdfund it like Podcast Movement.
Ooh, interesting. This morning, actually. And then the idea after that would be probably to take it on the road as a series of small conferences, like half conference, half workshop, just like a one-day thing. The idea, list of cities, you know, it's just like some of the biggest blogging cities in the U.S., which would be, so start with Portland because we have a bunch of employees there. But then after that, like San Diego, Austin, New York, and Nashville are some of the biggest. And we just want to meet customers in person, give them, you know, faces to the customer success team, you know. expect. I think I know like 20 people in Franklin. As far as like bloggers per capita, I think Franklin is really, really high up there. Yeah,
it's almost like the online marketing capital for Pete's sake.
Yeah, within a certain circle.
Yeah.
But yeah, people in Franklin, or if we even, you know, Michael Hyatt, Jeff Goins,
Grant Baldwin,
Donald Miller,
Aaron Walker, Dave Ramsey, Dr. Brian. Act. Yeah, Brian Harris.
Yeah, Brian.
That's awesome. Cool. So I think let's see some other questions coming in here. Nathan, what are the links to resources you provide to help build online businesses for bloggers and others?
Yeah, so we're not doing as much as I would like right now. The main things we have is I wrote the book Authority, and that's like my start to finish guide. We do a workshop every Thursday that Matt Regland, who is our Nashville employee, he teaches, and that's on marketing automation. And then we have more and more stuff coming out on the blog, like just in the last week or two, or last on my blog. So if you go to nathanberry.com, there's some posts on like marketing automation for professional bloggers. I actually haven't looked at my blog in a little while. It's been heavily neglected. You know, if you go to nathanberry.com and then click on marketing in the top, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that I've written there. So yeah.
Yep, I recommend Authority too. If you guys are getting started, awesome book, awesome collection of resources, really, really good stuff in terms of like teaching and selling. It's awesome. The hour. I want to feel maybe like one. Or two more questions, and then I think that'll be it. So we got a great one from Dave Chesson. If you were to go back in time and start ConvertKit all over again, what would you do differently?
I mean, I would have liked to get to the point a year ago where I was focusing on ConvertKit full time. Without the 2 years that preceded that, it would have been nice, you know, to have the overnight success start sooner than two and a half years in. What would I do differently? I guess I'd focus on a niche much sooner on. Years before that. Okay, here's the story. So I was at a conference, in Europe, and talking to somebody. This was right about the time. This was October of last year, and had this conversation. It was me, my good friend Ryan Delk, who, if you ever want to follow someone for growth, business development type stuff, I think he's the smartest person I know. Like, yeah, no offense to any of you here in this room, but Ryan Delk is the smartest person I know. So he was the head of growth at Gumroad. He's managed to connect to everybody. He built that whole. In a Trello board where I was tracking everything to follow up with that person. And Ryan just looks at me and said, I have been trying to get you to do that for 2 years. And really all he was trying to get me to do was document that this random person at a conference was interested in ConvertKit. And so to follow up with them in, you know, in a couple of weeks, see if they'd signed up or if they needed any help or whatever. And it's such a simple lesson of like, hey, track your sales process, reach out to people directly, follow up, all of that. And I just wasn't doing it. So yeah, if I were to go back in time, I would do that from day one, and I would actually learn sales and I would track the process.
Actually conduct the outreach now. How do you do that? What's been most effective for you guys?
So I make the list of what people are using, and then you know we get direct email addresses for everybody, and then just send an email and we say, hey Tom, saw that you're using MailChimp and I was wondering if there's anything that's frustrating you about it. And then the next sentence or the next paragraph is just like, the reason I ask is I've built this tool called ConvertKit, it's email marketing for professional bloggers. It's used by, and then I try to name three people that maybe they've heard of. So it won't necessarily be our biggest customers, but it'll be our most relevant customers. Usually people write back and they either say, like, not interested, which probably only 10% of people respond with something like that. But most of the time, they're like, actually, this is what frustrates me, you know? And they're like, it sucks that, and they'll go on this list, and they're like, if it's AWeber, they're like, oh, I have to pay for unsubscribes, I have to pay for duplicates, I can't, you know, do these automation things. Or like MailChimp, they'll get into like, oh, this is complicated, this is, you know, tracking people across multiple lists, giving away content upgrades, you know, and they'll give you the list. And then I just come back and say, actually, here's how ConvertKit handles X, Y, and Z. And it makes for a really natural sales conversation. And then sometimes started doing what we called concierge migrations. So if you switch to ConvertKit, we would migrate all of your forms, courses. Sorry, my kids are up above me in the living room playing around now. One of them just jumped off the couch. So anyway, so we'll migrate everything for you, move your autoresponders, move your subscribers, everything. Entirely for free. We did that for everyone who's on a $99 a month plan or higher. And that was a huge thing. And the reason is people would get all the way through and they'd say, this sounds great, but I do not want to move email lists. That's got to be a total pain. And so that just removed, you know, they've gotten all the way to that point and they have this one massive objection left. And then we take that objection away and they go, okay, well, I guess let's do it. and so that's awesome. That's been huge, you know, just doing work that other people aren't willing to do. And we got made fun of a lot by other software founders because they're like, that doesn't scale. Like, you know, how are you spending 15 hours of time migrating one person over who has this complicated setup? And, you know, I just said, like, well, we're going to trust that the math is going to work out eventually in the long run because they'll stick with us for years and they'll refer people and all of that.
What is your lifetime value of a customer now? Do you have that calculated? Do you have like an idea of like what it's, how much money you should put into time or money to put into to acquire a customer?
Yeah, so officially it's $551 is our lifetime value of a customer. That's not a number that I make decisions off of, because it's so radically different depending on how many, what plan you're on, how many subscribers you have. Like we have, you know, our biggest customer pays us, way more than that. They pay us $25,000 a year. Make a bunch of money overnight. And so, you know, those people will tend to sign up, stick around for a couple months, and then cancel. And so basically that lifetime value number is heavily skewed, and we need to break it down based on what level we're looking for. But our lifetime value on large accounts is insanely high, like well over $10,000.
That's awesome. And then Dave asked, does ConvertKit have A/B split testing?
No, so we do not right now, which actually, if you have fewer than 10,000 subscribers, I think you are doing yourself a disservice. Changes and you test that against itself, and what you'll find is that one of these identical versions will perform radically better than the other, and so you'll be like, wow, I should implement this version, you know, cause, and then I'll get a 6% lift in conversions or whatever. But there's no difference between that. And so if you don't have statistical significance, these A/B testing tools will often, they're not purposefully lying to you, and there's no flaw in it, it's just that they're being misunderstood. And so you will, you know, you'll be testing this button color against that button color. One of them will give a 5-10% lift, and you'll go, oh, red is better. Okay, we're going with red. And you keep doing that. A/B testing in emails unless you have at least 10,000 subscribers. And the reason is because when you're doing A/B testing, usually, so you have 10,000, you're testing a subject line, you're going to break it off, and a common split is 10-10-80. So you have two subject lines, one goes out to 10%, the other goes out to another 10%, and then you know you wait a few hours, see which one performs better, and send the 80%, you know, the remaining 80%, the winning subject line. Well, if you only have 1,000 subscribers, you just sent, you know, you're making a decision based on what 100 people have done and another 100 people have done. Future, but we don't have it yet.
Awesome. Great stuff. And then Dave Berlin asked, any book you're reading right now that's a game changer for you?
Let's see. I just read the Elon Musk biography.
That's good.
That was really good. And I'm just wrapping up The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. There's a lot of stuff that I can't relate to because like he's like, well, when you have 400 employees and you have to lay off, you know, 100 of them, here's why that sucks. I'm like, or he's like, when you know, when you're a publicly traded company and your stock crashes, like here's how you. And I'm like, I can't relate to that. But it's been a really good book, lots of good stories. And the other book that.
It's awesome. Very cool. Guys, do you have any other questions? I think we've gone through – I think I've asked every question that's come in the chat box. If I haven't, speak now. Cool. All right, Nathan. Well, I think that's it. That's all that's coming in, which is – I mean, it was great. I really appreciate your time. I know everybody here does, and I know we've already broken the hour time limit. So, Antonio, if you have any final words.
No, I just wanted to thank Nathan. Really appreciate you coming on. I know your time's valuable. You've got a family. And, look forward to hearing about these conferences. That's we were just talking before you came on about the importance of going to good conferences. So.
Other conferences, definitely email me because I want to make it as good of a conference as possible. And even though it's going to be really small, actually it being really small is what might make it really good. Who knows?
Yeah. Those are the best.
Cool.
So, yeah, and if I can help with anything, you know, any email marketing questions or ConvertKit questions or any of that, my email address is just nathan@convertkit.com.
Cool. And then Dave asks a good question. Anything we can do for you?
You can tell people about ConvertKit. You know, you hear about those random people. Someone's like, "Oh man, Infusionsoft something or other." You know, and they're just like getting frustrated and just like, we'll whisper in their ear and just say like, "Hey, have you seen?" You know, and so yeah, if you hear people they're thinking about switching, send them my way.
Awesome, will do. Cool, Nathan. Right. Well, thanks so much, man. It was a pleasure. Yeah.
Thanks, guys. See ya. Yep.
Cool, it's Antonio. So, yeah. Any other admin stuff?
Let me see. Double check. No, looks like. Now it sounds like you're having some great calls. I've got some great calls set up for Wednesday, and that's about it.
Guys. Yeah, I'm going to put my Calendly in here. If you don't have one with me this week, grab it and see if you can find a time. Otherwise, just that's cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Nick, do you guys have snow up there yet?
Yeah, man, it's snowing like crazy right now. Actually, the mountains wasn't very snowy at all, but now we're getting hit. It's crazy. It's gonna snow for the next couple days. So.
Yeah. And what about?
We got smoked with snow today. Just crazy. Oh yeah, I was looking at my website. I was like, I wish I could post and somebody would follow.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna chuck in a link here for you guys to take a look. Everybody's welcome. It's still in the transition to the server stage, so you can't register yet. It's not all there yet, but a second here.
Build this, like, how did you build this landing page?
I got a developer to do it. I didn't do any of it because I couldn't figure that out. And I got a graphic designer to draw the little dude because I couldn't do that either.
Where'd you find your developer and graphic designer?
The developer I Googled. I talked to just a whole bunch. I sent out a massive emails and got a bunch of phone calls. I picked the one that made me comfortable and came in at about the right price. For the graphic designer, though, I went to 99 Designs, and it was totally worth it. We had maybe 100 different... I've looked at it just recently. I might try them out. I don't know if anyone else has yet.
I had some podcast art designed once from 99 Designs, and it was about as equivalent as what I got on Fiverr. So I mean, I wasn't overall impressed with it.
Yeah, I got.
So I'm just saying it might be cheaper to go Fiverr route.
Yeah, maybe. The thing I liked about 99 Designs, I got a graphic designer now, and he did the first two logos. The competition was for two, and now I got a guy. I know exactly where I'm going for all of the headers. When I want to switch it up, I want to put little Santa hats on guys. I know exactly where I'm going, so it's kind of.
And you can then go into larger projects. But it's just about, I think, getting that relationship quick.
Well, and I did that actually off 99 Designs. Mm-hmm. I did the same thing. We did the competition or the 99 Designs process. And then immediately, as soon as I picked, we were on email outside of the system, and it's completely separate. So Fiverr is new to me, but I don't know. Anybody that's developing a website, you should be talking to Zach about him. He seems to know tons of stuff.
Or I'm sorry, one meeting a month, and then we'll get to one guest poster a month. So we'll have two meetings a month, but it won't be the weekly. It'll be every other week, with 1 week being a focused hot seats and focused on people, and then we'll have the additional we'll bring in the guest speakers. So Jave Chesson, he asked for Nathan. Boom, we got Nathan. So you guys see somebody. And probably look around. I think the more specific you get, the more down to earth, the more closer to where you're at, but maybe a couple years ahead, it's going to be, pretty, we'll see what we can do. That is his deal, because, and Tom's smiling because he's a good friend of both of ours,
Go ahead.
Now I've got, I can talk a little bit. I'll have Ryan Masters in the office next week. He's coming to hanging out with me for, he's a godfather to my, my youngest daughter, Katya. He's a paid traffic expert. So this guy is.
Periscope it. Is he coming on?
I'll just bring him on this thing. Bring them over here so we could talk a little bit about paid traffic. If you guys want to know about how to use Facebook ads, YouTube ads, Google AdWords, he's taking companies, from spending, a $500 or even a $50 budget to all of a sudden ratcheting. Someone I'd have to check. I don't know him as well. It's been a few years, but I'm sure that we could get David probably maybe in February or March. I'll have to reach out. I know he just had a daughter, so that's changed his schedule. Mike, anyone you particularly want to get out?
think you're muted.
You there?
I don't think it would be practical to get any of the people that I'm thinking of. At least the one guy that I've always wanted to meet was Mark Cuban. So
Mark Cuban, yeah, he's going to be a little bit hard to get on here.
I don't know if
he... I don't think he's going to be very useful.
Yeah,
I
don't.
Yeah, but if you want to talk to some... It gets on your list and they start interacting. You don't know who they are. And it turns out, you know, he's probably in his early 50s, but he definitely, he was one of the early internet 1.0 guys that just sold an ebook for $47, $97, and just sold, you know, 100,000 of them. So kind of added up.
Well, I'll look around and see if I can't find someone that I really want to emulate, like, and I'll make sure that it's someone that, you know, not super high level, but high enough to where it would be a value to everyone and not just me.
Yeah, well, you can be a little bit selfish. We'll try to bring in, you know, I know not everyone was into email marketing, but I think just seeing a guy, what I really liked with down, he just keeps the average high, and he cuts off those people which many companies would say, nah, we need to let him in because they're paying their bills, when he's like, it's not worth the money.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, anyone you want to see?
You know, your buddy with the paid advertising, that is exactly the road I want to go down next week. It's perfect.
I'll have him here.
After that, I got to do some research.
Yeah. So what we'll do, I guess, Tom, next week, maybe we'll zip through, have some quick hot seats or just, you know, some updates. We're doing a lot of one-on-ones with you guys, so I know that, you know, we're now getting into, you know, into things a bit deeper, and then we can.
Is there any way?
Yep.
Is there any way we can have them kind of like walk through, like setting up a pixel?
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. I need to do it for some
like
of my
stuff.
Like
a screen capture.
I'll have them do it with some of my stuff. That's a great, you know, motivator for me to have something set up so that we can actually set up my campaign as you guys watch it, because I haven't done paid campaigns for a while, so he can actually. Recorded as he's doing it. Cool.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone else? Was there any questions? Anyone else out there that needed? I'm checking in the comments.
Hey, maybe we just wait to John the next week after that.
Yeah, yeah, we can get John anytime. Yeah. He needs to pop.
Sure.
Yeah, he needs to get back. Yeah. So so let's do that. Let's I've got what's the dates? We can go ahead and schedule both. See if we can get John maybe on the
28th. Okay.
Okay. And I'll make sure that Ryan is available on the 21st. And we've got a lot of one-on-ones. Me and you are taking those, and I know I've got Mike. I think we're going to reschedule. Did you? My assistant, she'll send you an email here in the next few hours, if not sooner. And Zach, Bob, I think we've got a.
Guys.